Hello and welcome to A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy, the podcast that examines conspiracy theory, conspiracy fact, and those who promote these theories. I will be your host, Mike Bowler, as we take a look at conspiracy in the news, the week ending October 7th, 2018. And for this edition, I will be covering SpaceX under fire, more Alex Jones legal maneuvers, a possible left-wing conspiracy, and Kavanaugh hearing conspiracies. So let's get started. A shadowy op-ed campaign now smearing SpaceX in space cities. In an article on Ars Technica, reports of a campaign to undermine SpaceX in key cities that are either working close with Boeing, SpaceX, or those who make decisions on these on the space program. And apparently, early August, Boeing, Leanne Carrot, and SpaceX, Gwynne Shotwell, took the stage at Johnson Space Center to announce the first astronauts who will fly on their commercial crew spacecraft. It was a significant moment to see two of the most powerful women in aerospace alongside one another, two fierce competitors coming together for the good of the country. As President and Chief Executive Officer of Boeing's Defense, Space, and Security Unit, Carrot said the company took pride in working with NASA and the aerospace industry to bring human space launch capability back to America. All of us here today, because we stand for something new and profound, Carrot said. It is personal for all of us in this room, together returning American astronauts on American rockets from U.S. soil and creating endless possibilities for generations to come. But about this time, a half dozen newspapers across the country, several in key space markets, began publishing an op-ed that criticized the process by which Boeing competitor SpaceX fuels its Falcon 9 rocket. The first op-ed appeared in a Memphis newspaper a week before the commercial crew announcement. In recent weeks, copies of the same op-ed have also appeared in the Houston Chronicle, various Alabama newspapers, Albuquerque Journal, Florida Today, and the Washington Times. And the big question is, who placed these op-eds? These op-eds were bylined by a retired spacecraft operator, Richard Hager, who worked for NASA during the Apollo program and now lives in Tennessee. Each op-ed cites Hager's work on NASA's recovery from the Apollo 1 fire and hard lessons NASA learned that day about human spaceflight. But there's a problem. First of all, in the article, there were a number of factual inaccuracies. For one thing, SpaceX does play by the same rules as Boeing for commercial crew astronaut safety rules that NASA itself wrote. Moreover, NASA has already provisionally cleared the load and go for Falcon 9 launches that will send the Dragon spaceship in orbit. And when this writer went to find out and asked Hagar about his op-ed, his reply was, "I had no idea. Hagar never wrote these op-eds." So somewhere this op-ed came out of somewhere. Now there's suspicion that it was created by Boeing, who has been trying to maintain its contracts with NASA. It's possible that they are trying to undermine SpaceX's capabilities and their decision making. The op-ed may have come out of a PR firm that is associated with Boeing. So, with Elon Musk's current problem, or various problems associated with his Tesla product, apparently he's going through some SEC issues. I think the latest is that he's going to step down as chairman, and there's some fines he has to pay because of a a tweet about him taking the company private, which generated a lot of interest on Wall Street. The price of the stock went up, because that Musk didn't issue the appropriate paperwork on this particular stock purchase. What's going to be is, of course, when a company goes private, a investor comes in and they buy out outstanding shares of the company and run the company through the, then they become owners of the company. This is one of the problems or one of the issues that tend to come up during these things. If these aren't presented correctly to investors, there's a lot of controversy. It generates some controversy and potentially, then of course the stock price, of course, there's the general push up of the stock price artificially, which will generate profits for the people who actually own Tesla stock. And of course, Elon Musk runs the potential of making quite a bit of money off of this endeavor. So here, there's another, this is just another jab at SpaceX, or at least Elon Musk's problems, jab at him. I don't think this is really a conspiracy. This is just, sour grapes comes to mind. The idea that could be an issue is because currently the United States has no ability to launch astronauts on their own aircraft, on their own spacecraft. Even Boeing buys rocket engines from Russia. So having a purely American operation certainly runs against the Russians trying to create their own space program or operate their own commercial space operations. If the United States finally decides using SpaceX rockets or Boeing rockets, but they are also looking at everything is sourced, purchased, and built within the United States and launched from within the United States. Seems to be what it's at issue here. One could be the Russians pushing to undermine American efforts to re-enter the space program, commercial space operations. It could be Boeing's attempt to try to, again, undermine the competition so that they would have opportunities to provide for this operation. We don't know. We'll see what happens here and what may come out of this. So now we got Alex Jones is suing PayPal over InfoWars ban. I believe I talked about this last week, but if I didn't, PayPal decides to stop handling payments to the InfoWars store, the store that you can run out and buy wellness goods, supplements, and so on, which are probably products that generally doesn't do anything. They try to hype it up as for wellness or to cure certain conditions. And of course, InfoWars, one of their angles has been the anti-fluoride. So you can get your non-fluoride toothpastes and products through this InfoWars store. Well, apparently, PayPal had stopped taking payments and shut off the InfoWars site. And of course, Alex Jones decides to complain and file suit against PayPal. The suit is interesting. It's actually kind of funny. And I think it's probably some lawyer ease, or at least in reading the complaint, this is coming from the plaintiff is Free Speech Systems, LLC, a Texas limited liability company, and the defendant is PayPal Incorporated, a Delaware corporation. The complaint is for violation of the UNRUN Civil Rights Act, unlawful, unfair, and fraudulent business practices under California Business and Professions Code, subsection 17200, breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. And what's interesting is that Free Speech Systems, which is the overall company that is the home for Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, and the InfowarsStore.com, and attempting to use a Civil Rights Act that in California, and actually this is being filed in California, so a Texas company suing a Delaware corporation in California, which I think is interesting in of itself. So apparently this lawyer, it was shopping, or somebody was shopping around to find the best case that they could pull together. I mean, this could have been filed in any state, could have been filed in Texas or Delaware, where the plaintiff or the defendant exists. Of course, but apparently they're using California because this UNRRA Civil Rights Act, the UNRRA Civil Rights Act covers discrimination against color, religion, gender, sexual orientation, and disability. And using this, trying to use this Civil Rights Act to claim that, and religion is also a part of this. So that seems to be the crux that PayPal is discriminating against InfoWars based on religion. There's nothing in that Civil Rights Act to defend nutcases, conspiracy theorists, or liars. So they have to be doing it under religion. Well, so I'm just going to kind of throw that. I'm just going to leave that story out there because, I mean, Jones is certainly, he's got his hands full with the Sandy Hook litigations, the PayPal litigation now, how he's going to deal with the YouTube and being deplatformed. This is, again, an ongoing story, but this is another wrinkle in the Alex Jones saga. So I came across, last week we had this emergency test. It was a nationwide alert that went out to every cell phone in the United States. They refer to a presidential alert. This is a test. No actions needed. And that on its face didn't really scream conspiracy until I started saying many of the comments that were popping up on Facebook, and in particular, various left-wing types like Michael Moore on his Facebook page, his Facebook, what it was on his followers, that this was not a test of an emergency alert system. This was a way of Donald Trump opening up a second Twitter channel, and that this is a way to talk to every American and throw his craziness out to the whole country. And nothing in the Moore post, and of course the subsequent comments. I know you're not really supposed to read the comments. It'll drive you nuts, but I had to do it because, hey, I love you guys. I'll take that bullet for you. When I started reading this, nowhere in that particular article and subsequent articles from different other sources, they talked nothing about that this was a national alert. It's a test of a system to get natural disaster or national disaster information to the public. This all had to do with Donald Trump trying to force you to read something that he says, that this is going to be a second Twitter channel. So I wanted to make sure that what this thing is that what this thing is, or is it what I think it is? because when I started looking it up, and there's been some articles that talked about this also, but for you kids that may not have been aware, there was this thing called the Cold War. There was an actual fear that the United States would become a target by the Soviet Union for nuclear bombers. So Harry Truman, through various, there was a couple laws put together to create a national alert system. The first program was called CONELRAD, CONELRAD, was established in 1951 to alert the American people of a nuclear attack. This was to alert Americans in case of Russian bombers were on the way to drop nuclear bombs. This was keyed into the radio system and a little bit later to the television, to where if such an attack was occurring, they can break in and give you pertinent information about a nuclear attack. When the Russians and the United States were able to, well, Russians, when they started moving away from nuclear bombers to nuclear missiles, a reorganization of this emergency system was put together in 1963 called the Emergency Broadcast System. Again, this was to alert for nuclear attack, nuclear missiles on the way, so on, but it was expanded to cover tornado warnings and alerts, and in some cases, some severe weather. Then the system was updated to the EAS system in 1997, where the tornado warnings, the tornado alerts, nuclear attack, and severe thunderstorms were put into this emergency alert system that we have right now. This is all keyed into your phone. Apparently, in 1997, it was mandated that cellular communications, telephone, whatever, would be linked into this system, depending on what type of alerts and who was going to get these alerts. Now, more than likely, if you work during the day, you probably never see these tests. Once a month, they will do an EAS test, or if you live in a place where there's high probability of tornadoes, severe thunderstorms, earthquakes, and so on, you might get a EAS alert on your television. And as part of this EAS system, it was to include cell phones in some form or another. And it wasn't until smartphones came about. I mean, this is built into some phones, but now that roughly, 97% of Americans own cell phones, and roughly 77% of those are smartphones, adding this particular presidential alert, which is what they generally refer to it, again, part of a national or regional event that needs to be information get out to everybody. So I thought this is not anything but a signal that goes out to your phone, and it's supposed to tell you what happened and where to get more information. Tune to radio stations such and such, find your local TV, whatever. It'll direct you in a certain way. This is actually run by FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Administration, the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, and the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, to get critical information to the public. The NOAA covers all sorts of different weather, FEMA, natural disasters, and the FCC, of course, is the administrator of this system. And technically, the president has very little input to this. While he can issue a national alert, it still has to go through FEMA and the FCC, FEMA, FCC, and the NOAA. And it would have to be of a disaster capability. Our current president, Donald Trump, cannot go on and type in something, you know, Democrats bad as a national alert. But of course, also, I'm going to be picking on the libertarians here. Apparently, this is one of their big things, is that they treat this alert as some type of weird, I don't know why they're opposed to this national alert. There seems to be some that think that, you can opt out on Amber Alerts for anyone outside the country. This is if a child has been kidnapped or something going on with a child that we need that some immediate help is needed to track down or try to help locate a lost child. Various weather alerts can come across your phone, but apparently you can opt out on the current system. But there seems to be an issue with this and the advanced 9/11 system, where if you are on a cell phone or smartphone and you dialed for help, it's supposed to give your location so that emergency responders can find you. But apparently there's an issue about apparently this information is supposed to be, there's some kind of privacy thing. Okay. And so it's a mystery to me. This is my own opinion. I'm sure as listeners, you probably have different opinions. This is an emergency situation. If you're in a fire, a car accident, you've been kidnapped, there's some sort of thing and you're trying to call 911 to get help, you don't want to be hiding your location. So to keep police, fire, rescue teams, ambulances from finding you. I find this insane that there are people out there who think this is all some type of way of gathering your data. And I thought, well, and I did do some more looking into this, the E-911 system. Now for some reason, they're calling it an E-911 chip. There is no such thing as an E-911 chip. Much of the stuff you're seeing there is, it's kind of bogus, but there is a E-911 functionality in your phone. You dial the phone for a brief moment. The GPS will send, your location to the 9/11 call center so that they can find you, because, a cell phone is portable. You may use it at home. A lot of people do. Or you might be out on the road. I mean, if you're living in Illinois and you're traveling to California, you could be anywhere between those two points. You call in to get some help. Do you want them going to your home in Chicago? Or did they want to find you out in the middle of the desert in Colorado? I mean, again, this logic here that, is generating this. So I'm beginning to wonder if there isn't some type of weird conspiracy from the left to attack privacy, or that these are attacks on privacy, or anything that private information, putting it out, is somehow an affront to liberal ideas. I don't know. And really, I'm only seeing this primarily either on liberal sites, or I'm seeing this from libertarian sites. So I'm guessing this has to do with some type of privacy thing. I don't know why, if you're trying to find out if there's an emergency, if there's a tornado in your area, why you don't want to know about that. You want to shut your phone off for that. Hey, that's fine. I mean, because I'm pretty sure that these are the same people who will complain that they didn't get the alert that a tornado is on their way, and complain about that when more than likely they had it shut off on their cell phone. But anyhow, I mean, such a level of ridiculousness. I think there is some type of conspiracy in the works. I'm going to look into this more, because it may be just how, the level, I'm going to say maybe even the level of stupidity in the American people has gotten. more than if it's really a conspiracy. So I'm just going to stop at that, because the other crazy aspect of the past week has been this Kavanaugh confirmation. This is Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court nomination, and the accuser, Christine Blasey Ford. And in and of itself, it's insane what is happening, that various Republicans have gone on record who have supported Kavanaugh and wants to put him in office. Other Republicans are convinced that Kavanaugh shouldn't be confirmed. Certainly the Democrats don't want the guy because they're concerned about his conservative views and the potential to overturn Roe v. Wade, which is the made abortion legal in the country, plus all sorts of other, to press forward other conservative issues such as birth control, women's rights, and so on. And in and of itself is crazy, but let's see. There is apparently conspiracies attached to this. So the first one is Kavanaugh has a doppelganger. Arguably the most prominent theory to arise from the trial is one stemming from Ed Whalen, a conservative activist and former clerk to the late Justice Anton Scalia, who alleges that Kavanaugh's doppelganger was responsible for the assault on his accuser, Christine Blasey Ford. Extrapolating from Ford's account of the sexual assault, Whalen used Kavanaugh's 1983 yearbook and publicly available information to track down a classmate who lived near where the incident took place. In a now-deleted Twitter thread, Whalen noticed that the alleged similarities between the two men's appearances, though Whalen was careful to say he did not state, imply, or insinuate that the classmate or anyone else committed the sexual assault, he decided to post the identity of the classmate anyway. So apparently, Kavanaugh didn't do it. Somebody who looked like him did this, and Ford is pointing to Kavanaugh. Okay. Of course, the next one is Ford is an actress. This idea has a number of variants, including the notion she's being sponsored by Coca-Cola, since the brand appeared all over TV when she sipped the Coke during her testimony. Most bizarre, however, is one conspiracy website's insistence that Ford is being played by actress Amy Schumer, a distant cousin of Senator Chuck Schumer, a Democrat of New York. The site compares the elementary school pictures of these two women and presents a do-it-yourself biometric analysis comparing the two women's features. And then we have a conspiracy, one. Deborah Ramirez was an associate of George Soros. Can't have a conspiracy without George Soros. Mistaken identity again. National Review reporter John Fund circulated a rumor on Twitter that Deborah Ramirez, who has accused Kavanaugh of exposing himself to her at a dorm party at Yale, was the recipient of a fellowship funded by Democratic billionaire donor George Soros. While the award was real, the problem was that Fund had pinned down the wrong Ramirez. He quickly issued an apology on Twitter, but not before the idea caught fire. Of course, we got more George Soros. He was behind the Jeff Flake elevator setup. Less than a week after Fund retracted his Ramirez claim, he was at it again, this time fingering Soros as the mastermind behind the two liberal protesters who accosted Senator Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, in a Capitol elevator to share their stories of sexual assault. Fund discovered that one woman, who he credits with changing Flake's mind, works for a nonprofit that receives funding from Soros' Open Society Foundation, and claimed that was proof that she was no mere activist. Fund stopped just shortly of actually accusing Soros of paying the woman to tell her story, but with the headline, "Look Who's Was Behind the Jeff Flake Elevator Setup," the implication of the 850-word diatribe was clear. The suggestion was now picked up steam on Twitter, if Flake mentions are any indication. Of course, now here we got the Ford was brainwashed. This theory holds that the deep state, which some people on the far right suspect of trying to undermine President Donald Trump, brainwashed Ford into believing Kavanaugh had assaulted her. While it's unclear which dark corner of the web this theory sprang from, it's widely popularized when Ford host Fox host Jeannie Pirro suggested that Ford was hypnotized into believing her accusations. Some propagators of this rumor place the blame specifically on the CIA. But of course, on the same topic, Ford brainwashed herself. Margot Cleveland, a former law professor and contributor to the conservative outlets like the National Review, had a different spin on Ford's hypnosis. It was self-induced. On Monday, Cleveland took to Twitter to play the connected dots, citing a research paper Ford co-authored in 2008 on the therapeutic benefits of hypnosis to claim that Ford could have created her own false memories. Now, Ford has also accused Neil Gorsuch of assaulting her. This theory holds that Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, the top Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, was aware of a similar set of allegations by Ford against Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. It can be traced back to a viral tweet by notorious pro-Trump troll Josh Cornett. As Media Matters reported, the story was quickly picked up by right-wing Twitter accounts, including the conspiracy news site Gateway Pundit and Fox News contributor Kevin Jackson. What Cornett's tweet described as a mystery developing was more likely another rumor the known hoaxer had invented. And of course, we got Ford was linked to fired FBI agent Peter Sturrock. Peter Sturrock was fired by the FBI in August for anti-Trump text often characterized by the far right as a deep state agent, as a deep state agent in the war to undermine Trump. There seems to be a rumor that Ford's brother used to work with a woman named Jill Sturrock. While this woman happens to have the same name as Sturrock's wife, the fact-checking site Snopes quickly stepped in to debunk any theories that they were related by marriage or biologically. And of course, the general craziness, I guess the crazy part of the story, everyone who opposes Kavanaugh is controlled by Satan. This may be more of a worldview than a conspiracy theory, but a number of right-wing talk show hosts have pointed to Satan, not Soros, as the mastermind behind Kavanaugh's critics. So that has been what the crazies have talked about on Kavanaugh. Apparently, since this article is written, I'm not 100% sure if he's made it. I think he's made it through the Senate. I don't know if there's some more approvals that have to happen. But certainly, it's going to be a fun ride here over the next year or so. So with that, that's the news for the past week. I have no personal announcements or any particular announcements. Still screwing around with a lot of stuff in the background here. So I'd like to thank you for listening. This was episode 110, recorded October 7th, 2018. Thank you for listening, and good night.